Yeah, it's me. I'm here in Scottsdale, Arizona, and I'm looking outside the window, and I see blue skies, 84 degrees, palm trees, dare I say, a couple bikinis. I'll tell you what, it's March, and it is beautiful here in Phoenix, Arizona, Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm drinking a potent brain and body fuel, whatever the heck that is. I hope it's good for me. Listen, guys, I got a great interview coming your way. I got to sit down with Gina Yashere. Gina is a comedian you probably know best from Trevor Noah's The Daily Show, formerly Jon Stewart's The Daily Show. You might also know her from NBC's Last Comic Standing, or you've seen her Netflix specials. She's got a couple specials up there on Netflix. She's also a part of the show, The Stand-Ups. I really enjoyed sitting down with Gina. She's got an interesting perspective. She is a British comic working here in the United States. She's got a whole crazy cool accent that I love. We get into the accent, we get into The Daily Show, the Netflix specials, and we also talk a little bit about an article she recently published for the Huffington Post in which she details the differences between female and male comics headlining across the country. In other words, if a woman comic is not funny, then it's that woman is not funny. Specifically, that woman is terrible. But if it's a male comic that's not funny, it's just, oh, that comedian is not funny. So there's some definite bias and differences there. We detail it all in this interview. Before we get to the interview, I want to tell you a little bit about a company. They're called Goodness Unlimited. Goodness Unlimited is more than a t-shirt brand. It is actually a movement. Their mission is to promote goodness in the world. And don't you know we all need more of that these days? Goodness in thoughts, words, and actions can transform ourselves and our world for the better. Together, we can all make a positive impact. Become a part of the Goodness Unlimited movement. Visit them at goodnessunlimited.com and follow them on Instagram. They are a good follow. @goodness_UNLTD. That's @goodness_UNLTD. And tap into the endless stream of goodness. They're a really cool company, guys, a new brand here in the Phoenix area. And I'll tell you what, their shirts are really comfortable and they're pretty cool design. So I would check them out, goodnessunlimited.com. All right, here we go. Here's the interview. Enjoy. Mm-hmm. Let's do this. Going deep backstage, my name is Billy Harfosh. We're at the House of Comedy on High Street in Phoenix, Arizona. And I have Gina Yashere. Did I do okay with the name?
You did good,
pretty good. I hit it when the camera's on. Gina, we got a couple minutes with you before your show here.
Okay.
Let's get into the weeds a little bit about Netflix. Now, I've been checking out your specials, the stand-ups, Laughing to America, Skinny Bitch, all that stuff. From our perspective, we're just sitting there and it looks so easy. We're eating popcorn, eating pizza. From your perspective, on that night of the actual recording, I mean, you got to nail that, right?
Yeah, I mean, my specials are made under different circumstances. So Laughing to America, Skinny Bitch, both made by myself. They were both made before Netflix was in existence. I think Skinny Bitch was in, I made it in 2008. They might have been in existence, they definitely weren't making comedy specials.
Okay.
At that time. At the time I was making my stuff for the DVD market. So I was like, I'm ready to make a DVD. So I literally, those first two specials, I rented a theatre, hired my own director and crew, sold the theatre out. So I did all of the work for that.
Okay.
In making that special, put all my own money into it. So they were all paid for, those two were paid for by myself.
Now that's one take?
One take.
One take.
The first one, Skinny Bitch, I did two shows. I filmed both of them and then edited between the two.
Okay.
The second one, Laughing to America, was when I first moved to the States and I shot it in San Francisco. And the budget was a lot higher because Americans are a lot more expensive, the film crews and stuff and theaters to shoot than in London. So I literally had one take. I sold out the theater for one show and got the crew, and I had to nail it in that one show.
Now there's obviously financial considerations and you're presenting yourself and all this. You got one show, you want to make it good. Do you control the audience? And what I mean by control, do you give out tickets to certain people, like your fans that you know will laugh? How does that all work?
With the one in London, I'm quite well known in London. So that was easy because I literally just went, I'm doing a massive show, I'm doing a DVD taping, buy tickets. And people, my fans, bought tickets for the shows. San Francisco, I'd only been in America a few years at that point. It was 2012. Nobody knew who I was. So I was living in LA at the time. I'd fly over to LA, do shows around the comedy clubs around San Francisco. and just hand out flyers again. Look, if you like what you saw tonight, I'm shooting a DVD, I'm doing a special, buy tickets for this. And basically, it was all very organic. It was just people
who real people.
And then I did a lot of radio interviews and just made sure that I was really good on the radio. And people were like, who is this woman? All right, let's go and check her out. So for the San Francisco taping, a few of them were fans, but the majority of them were people who knew nothing about me, but they just took a chance because they'd heard me on something or seen me do a 5-minute set somewhere, and I gave them a flyer afterwards. So those two specials. So those are a lot more pressure because I'm spending my own money.
Sure.
You know, upwards of, I spent $30,000-$40,000 on each one of my own money. So I was like, I'm making this special. I may make my money back. I may not, but I'm investing in my own talent.
Right.
So those two specials are definitely higher pressure for me because of all the money I was putting into it, time and everything. And you know, I had nobody. I didn't have a team of people behind me. So I just did it all myself. I'm selling tickets. I'm trying to get people to come to the show.
Gosh.
I'm promoting it. I put my own director I put the film crew. I did it all myself.
All right. I'm going to go back and watch those again because now I have a perspective of so much. You put so much into that. That's an incredible thing. And when the lights came on, you absolutely nailed it, I have to tell you. Now, people know you, Gina, from different things here in the United States. I want to talk just for a moment about...
I never told you about the stand-ups, though.
Okay. Yeah, wait.
The stand-ups...
Explain what that is, first of all. That's okay. Not only you.
The stand-ups is a totally different experience.
Okay.
As a special.
Right.
So Netflix is doing all these half-hour specials, and they're kind of theming. So they're grouping a bunch of comedians together and theming it. So they've got, like, the comedians of the world, where they're going all over the world and getting different comedians. And this was called the stand-ups. And the first season went very well. And I got 2 weeks' notice for that one.
2 weeks' notice?
2 weeks' notice.
But you had material. Let's be honest.
Yeah, so basically my manager calls me up and says, Netflix is interesting, because I've always wanted to be on Netflix. I kept sending...
And Netflix is it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I kept sending... I sent them Skinny Bitch before. I sent them Laughing to America. They never really bit. So I've been trying to get on Netflix. So my manager calls me up and goes, okay, Netflix is finally on board. They're kind of interested in you. They're shooting these stand-up specials. I heard that the stand-ups was being shot.
Right.
But I didn't know whether I was in with a chance. And
okay.
Shesh calls me up and says, look, you know, they're interested. They're looking to shoot in a couple of weeks. Are you ready?
Are you like, couple of weeks?
Nope. They were like, you got a half hour. I was like, I'm ready. I stay ready. I've got half an hour. I'll put a set together. And we'll do it. And I only got to try out that set once before I shot the special.
So was that material you had been working? Is that kind
of
new stuff? They caught you at an odd time?
Some of it I'd only been doing it. So basically I was doing bits of the material all over the place. But then to stitch the set together and make the story arc and everything,
right.
I didn't only have the one opportunity to actually work that set as it was. I flew into LA for the special on, let's say the special was shot on a Thursday. On the Wednesday night, I ran to a couple of different clubs and just did a couple of sets and stitched it together. So I had one night to run
that
the set.
That is pressure. People don't realize that is pressure.
But
check
for me,
that out.
It wasn't that much pressure because for me, I was like, I'm not having to get the people there. I'm not paying for the crew. I'm not putting any of this together. All I've got to do is turn up and do my jokes. So that was the easiest special.
That's
I'd
what
ever
you
done.
Do. That's what you do anyways.
Yeah.
How crazy is it to be right now in the age of Trump, and you are often featured on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah.
Yeah.
I saw one of your segments when Trump was in London,
yeah,
in your home country of England, and you know, you did a really funny segment. Go check it on YouTube about the different signs and stuff that people are holding up. It seems like for a comedian, take politics out of it for a moment, this is a great time to be a comedian in the age of Trump on The Daily Show, which is, well, I guess the biggest political comedy show out there.
Yes and no.
Why no? Let's go with the no.
No, because you can't make that stuff up. And it's become so crazy that no joke can match the crazy of what he's doing.
It's played out?
It's kind of played out, and it's so much, and it's so often, it becomes almost hack when you're doing Trump jokes, because every day he's bombarding us with more bullshit.
You just read his Twitter feed.
Yeah, it's tiring and tiresome.
Okay.
After a while.
All right.
So, yeah, if you watch, I could do an hour set and not mention Trump once.
But on TV, isn't that great? I mean, for you, for Noah, because it's like, if you had a boring president, it's not so fun. You have material there all the time.
Yeah, but then it's like, he's crazy. Yeah, he's crazy. Oh my God, look what he did today. He's so crazy. Look what he's so racist. Look what he did today. Oh, he's racist again. It's becoming repetitive because it's every day. It's another, we all know now. Everybody knows that he's a crazy person.
Okay, everyone knows he's a crazy person.
Yeah, so to try and make it more interesting, it's a lot harder now.
All right, okay, yeah. I feel that. Now, can you sum up in one or two sentences, Why, Gina, have you... Now, I think you're going to be in London in June, is that correct?
Yes.
Is that announced? I can say that. In June. But overall, in your career, at least right now, you're building your career, television, stand-up clubs, crashing, all this stuff here in America. Why America over England?
It's not a case of America over England. It's America and England. I've always seen myself as an international comic. I've wanted to perform everywhere. I performed in Malaysia 4 times, Singapore, Hong Kong.
But where do you live?
I live in New York.
Okay.
But I feel like America, the US seems to control the whole entertainment industry.
Mm-hmm.
So if you make it big in America, you've automatically made it big all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
You do well in the States, you immediately are afforded respect wherever you in the country of your birth, where you've come from. So, yeah, in England, I was a big fish in a small pond. And, you know, from a kid, I've always dreamed of coming out to the States. I thought in America they had better movies than us, better clothes, better bicycles, better toys as a kid. So it's always been my dream to come out to the States. And as an entertainer, once I do well here, I've noticed an increase in my career back home. I was already quite well known in England,
mm-hmm.
but once I came to America and made a stamp here and started to get successful in the States, my career in England has improved. I'm getting a lot better offers because I'm getting more respect because I've gone somewhere else, especially to the States where the competition is a lot harder.
I was going to say.
I made it. So then they're like, oh, well, I've now gained a newfound respect.
Has your accent helped you? Americans, we are obsessed with that British accent. I know when I hear a girl with that accent, I think it's hot. Especially when American girls hear a guy with a British accent, they're just dying. Has that helped your career? Be honest with me.
Yes and no. Yes, and that makes me stand out. In that when I go up on stage, you know.
Automatically.
They look at me and they, you know, because I used to find it difficult to get booked in certain comedy clubs because they just look at a picture and they see a black woman and all the sort of preconceived notions of what a black female comedian is going to talk about, they get it from a picture. So they're like, oh, she's going to be talking about her vagina for an hour. She's going to be cursing a lot. She's going to be, you know what I mean? And that's what they got from a picture. So going up on stage and I open my mouth, people are like, oh, this is different. Okay. And so I get a lot more interest and a lot more curiosity based on that. And plus, I've obviously got the material to back it up. I mean, my material is a lot different from every other comedian who looks like me.
Right.
So that has been helpful in that way. The way it's not been helpful is, I have a British accent, but I haven't got the face that goes with the archetype.
So they're confused.
British face. Exactly. You know, people hear British accent, they're expecting to see,
Queen.
Russell Brand, the Queen, Ricky Gervais, that's what they're expecting.
Right.
So when I open my mouth, I mean, Idris Elba has helped to make that a little bit better for me now.
Okay.
But I was here in America working and doing stand-up way before Idris Elba blew up. So I'm going on stage and they're like, what is this? So it confused people. So when I'm pitching TV shows to various channels and various stations, they didn't know what to do with me. They're like, we love that you're different, but it's so different, we don't know what to do with you. So I feel like I've always been ahead of my time.
I got 2 more quick ones for you because they're going to open the doors here at the House of Comedy. Have you had your holy shit moment? In other words, you've been on Conan, you've been on Jay Leno, you've been on big stage, you've been on television. Has that moment came when you like wake up in the middle of the night and say, holy shit, I've made it? Has it happened?
I've had a holy shit, I'm on the cusp of something really big here moment. And that is writing a pilot with Chuck Lorre.
Oh, man.
So Chuck Lorre invited me to help him write a pilot. It was me, Chuck Lorre, Eddie Gorodetsky, and Al Higgins in a room. So just 4 of us in a room writing a pilot. And we're filming it in April for CBS. It's called Bob Hart's Abishola. It's with Billy Gardell from Mike and Molly. And basically he has a heart attack, goes to hospital, falls in love with a Nigerian nurse that's looking after him. So I helped write that show. Obviously I've written myself in as her friend.
I was just going to ask, are you
I'm
in
not
it?
Silly. I've written myself in a little bit. I've got a little part in there. But the pilot shoots in April. And when that show gets picked up, touching wood, this is going to be massive. So that's one where I wake up in the middle of the night and go, holy shit, I've written a show with Chuck Lorre, who is the most successful sitcom producer in American history. So,
that is amazing. By the way, one difference. She said touching wood, we knock on wood. Little British-American difference.
Yeah, well, it's English-English. We touch wood.
You guys speak.
We touch
wood. You speak the real English. Yeah. Last one. You wrote an article telling me I'm funny for a black woman isn't a compliment. Last thing. By the way, it's on the Huffington Post blog. You should go on there. It's called Telling Me I'm Funny for a Black Woman Isn't a Compliment. We could have a whole podcast just about that article.
Yeah.
I want to touch on one thing. We're here at the House of Comedy in a comedy club. What can comedy club owners do to get women more involved, to get more women headliners out there across the United States.
Do what they do for the white dudes. Book them, and if they're not massive names, do what they do for the white guys. Paper the rooms, promote, get them out as much as possible, but book us. Do you know what I mean? When I first came to the States, I had issues getting booked. And I know I'm a headliner. I've been headlining in England before I even set foot on American soil. But it was hard to get booked because they feel like with a woman, they're taking a risk. The people might not want to come out to see a woman, or a woman might not be as funny as a headlining dude. And all the kind of stupid, ridiculous preconceived notions that they have about that.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, there's nothing special you have to do for us. Just treat us the same way that you do the dudes. When you book these dudes that nobody's heard of, I mean, I go on websites of various comedy clubs and it's mediocre, 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 unknown, nobody's heard of this white guy, but they book, and then every 15 of them you might get a woman. And when it's a woman, you know that she's got a lot of credits, she has to have the best credit, she has to be super famous, she has to have a massive online following to get the same booking that these unheard of white guys are getting. So I'm just saying, treat us the same. You know, get us in, promote us properly, promote it, get people to come and see us. Even if you have to paper the room, doesn't matter, because you're still getting your food and drinks money. That's where the majority of the comedy clubs earn their money anyway, from the food and drinks. So just get people in, and then once they come and they see us and they go, oh, I had a really good time with her, then you've got the fans made, and they'll come
there
back.
There it is. That's a tipping point across the whole country.
It's a good business model.
I got Gina fired up before her show. Let's calm down a little bit. Gina, thank you so much.
Thank you,
appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Awesome. Bye, everybody.